we did.
I know, mate. I know. It's.
I say we.
Yeah. I say we're part of it.
We've been a small part of this project, and yeah. And I mean, even we're overwhelmed with how professional we look at this point.
It's mind blowing.
With great help from great people,
yeah,
of course. Both our partners, Stu here at the studio, have been a great help in making two unorganized people. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think we obviously had an idea, and we didn't probably think further down the line than sitting down and talking.
Yeah.
And obviously you say we've got great people who've...
So yeah, we're just as shocked to look as professional as we do. But here we go. Here we go again. So I think today, Craig and I wanted to touch upon our emotions with regards to how we're feeling after this coming out. Mm. And this is something that has resonated with throughout football careers, business careers, relationships, life,
yeah,
really, in and that is the feeling of imposter syndrome and overwhelm, even in the face of positivity.
Mm.
And that's exactly, I think we both shared this feeling of, once we kind of launched this, we were willing to be vulnerable, and it was met with really kind thoughts and feelings and support and emotion, and that has left us both feeling, I mean, incredibly grateful. Yeah,
100% overwhelmed.
But overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And it's a feeling that I think we've both shared throughout our life, particularly in the good moments, of being an imposter, being a fraud, being undeserving of this, maybe.
I think so, yeah. Having the goodness and always maybe expecting badness to happen.
Yeah.
Something good goes well, and then ultimately you're always waiting for that kick in the teeth with the bad stuff to follow it.
That's exactly how I feel.
Yeah, and I think you say it's putting it out there has been amazing, and obviously the kind of what we've got, the messages, the love that we've received has been unbelievable. But you said that, I think it's taken its toll a couple of days after, just trying to process it all. As you said, trying not to kind of self-sabotage it in a way.
Self-sabotage is a really key phrase there. Without the support of yourself, Amber, Holly, friends, family, that I would have run away from this, I think. What I remember from my days where I wasn't as healthy as I am now was ignorance is bliss a little bit. So I would run from these things, and that would, in my case, involve drink and drugs. Like, and they would be a great escapism to actually dealing with good or bad situations head on. In the same sense, we were talking earlier as well, and something I wanted to share about was, if I did something good, if, say for example with football, I had no ability to recognize that might have been me that had achieved those things or accomplished those things. So I'd have this physical manifestation of OCD-like tendencies, trying to replicate every little thing that went into that day to create that moment. So if it was football and I played well and I scored, it was nothing to do with me or my ability or my hard work. Yeah. It was all to do with kind of the superstition-based luck that had gone into it. And that was that feeling of imposter. So I remember playing football, and if the previous Saturday had gone well, I was weighing out the peanut butter to the same gram. I was getting up at the exact same time. I was having the same conversations with the same people. So I'd ring my dad at a certain time run an errand that I didn't need to run and go again, just to kind of replicate everything that led to that situation, because it couldn't have been me.
Yeah.
It must have been the fact that I touched a lamppost or walked on two drains that had meant that I had...
That becomes tiring, doesn't it? Because you're concentrating on so much on doing all those right things. And then what happens when it doesn't go well? Then does the routine change? Do you try and find out what you didn't do that you might have not done in that day?
The exhaustion is a... I remember by the time kickoff came, even down to listening to the same songs in the car, like everything would... And so by the time the whistle actually blew for me to go and perform again in the same way I hoped to perform, I was knackered.
trying to control the outcome. You're trying to control it rather than allowing it to flow, because you want it to be as perfect as it was the last time.
Flow.
Yeah.
That's a word we'll touch upon in many episodes, I'm sure, as we go forward. Flow state, and obviously some of the work you do with Elevation is about creating that flow state, that feeling of complete home within yourself, where you're and that is what good moments feel like. When I'm asked to we showed some clips of some of your goals on the Instagram account, and I watched on in awe, like watching you score overhead kicks or whipping the ball in the top corner or turning your man and finishing. And I know if I asked you to describe those goals to me, you wouldn't be able to describe how they happened. They just did.
Yeah.
In your flow.
Just didn't think. It just allowed it to happen.
You're in your flow.
Yeah.
So tell me, in your career, did you, we mentioned it on the previous episode, like when things went well, fear set in.
Yeah.
Or that imposter, that voice, that monkey on the shoulder, if you will, was saying, you're not good enough. This is not for you.
I think we explained, when I explained it to you previously, saying like, obviously I had all these voices in the champ, and then if I would have gone to the Premier League, the pressure, the expectation, the kind of that imposter syndrome of, was I good enough to be at that level? Mm. It was just tiring, always having to kind of fight that and say, when something went well, it was always, oh, I'm waiting for that something bad to kick in. There was never that kind of real appreciation in that moment of what I'd done. It was always, oh, I've done well, but what's going to happen? What's the bad thing that's going to happen? Mm. And that was that, again, that date when I went out of Amber, I'd scored a hat trick. Mm. Couldn't revel in that, couldn't enjoy that hat trick and be in that moment. It was kind of like, oh, I missed a fourth. So it was like the negative that came out of it.
Yeah.
So I did that, always fighting that self-sabotage, always trying to put myself down, like not build myself up, not make, like be proud of what I've achieved. It was always like, it was, nothing was ever good enough.
Yeah.
And it was, and it was always trying to find that thing to make me good enough.
Yeah.
And there were never ever was a thing that was going to make me good enough. I'd spend
goalposts always moved.
Oh yeah. And it's like, I'd achieved something, but it's like, well, I should have achieved the next thing beyond that. Or it should have been higher than what I've achieved. Yeah. And it's like, it's a never ending thing you chase. You can never be content. Mm. You can't be content in that moment. You can't be content if you're always chasing something. And again, I think that's a bit of self-sabotage, because you're always bringing it back to, well, I see it was going to fail, or it wasn't going to be work out anyway. So it throughout my career, I had that. There was amazing moments, and there was, say, moments of flow state where I'd get on the pitch and I wouldn't think about it. And then there was moments of just real sabotage, am I meant to be here? Am I good enough to be here? Mm. It's like you're saying, it's hard to control all the time. It's hard to...
And we carry that with us now still.
Yeah.
And both of us are in a better position. Mentally, we both would say, hence the podcast, hence being able to have conversations that we hope to help people, to have conversations that we hope to be impactful and powerful and to resonate, but we still suffer.
Yeah.
I never want this to be a rule book about kind of, this is how we think you should do things and follow it.
Yeah.
We're just going to share our stories and hope that finds someone somewhere that they can resonate, or it can help them, and they may have a similar experience. I know every experience is unique, but there can be moments in what we talk about where they can say, I know how that felt, or I remember that feeling. So it's never a case of we're great now and let us give you a guidebook as to how to fix everything, because we're still doing it. We're still feeling it. And it's a great space for us to have conversations. Mm. Like we're having this really for the first time.
Being honest with each other, being honest with yourself. When we're having these conversations, we don't hide anything. We tell it how it is. Like, no matter how brutal that is, no matter how hard it sounds, we're willing to be honest.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we want to get across to people, is be honest with yourself. Like, be honest, get those emotions out. Don't be scared to be honest with yourself. Don't be scared to be honest with people of how you're feeling.
Yeah.
Like there are people just like us that are around to help. We want everyone to succeed. We want everyone to get better. And obviously the more you speak about it, the more we can each help each other kind of achieve that.
Yeah.
And be in a place of peace, be in a place of flow.
I'll be honest, I took a day off earlier this week because of this. Mm. And I have worn this badge of honor of how hard I work in all that I do, kind of with my business, with my football, with fitness, with anything. Like, I'm like, look how hard I work, and respect me for it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's almost the way I've behaved. I know I've done that, not necessarily consciously, but I know I'm saying, oh, I've done loads of work today. I've helped this many people today. I've done these things. And actually, I had a moment this week where I just went, I'm completely fucking overwhelmed by it. I don't know what to do with this feeling. And it's not a case of not having that feeling. It's seeing it, being aware of it, and trying to recenter and
I think accept it in.
Yeah, accept it. Yeah. Acceptance is huge.
Yeah.
And so I took a day off and I did some life admin, kind of relaxed and went to the gym, but didn't overly work out, just moved well, ate well, had a sauna, had a steam and had a day of just acceptance, I think is a great term. And that's huge progress for me. Awareness of how I'm feeling is progress. Doing something about it is actually progress. And that day has allowed me to say it's okay to be okay at something. It's okay to be proud of something. Yeah. It's okay to feel like you're heading in the right direction and to not want to run the opposite way. Because that's been my immediate reaction my whole life.
Yeah.
It's the run from it. When things get good, I've run away. When things get bad, I've run away. And sometimes that is because I feel undeserving or... Yeah, and...
How did you feel standing in your ground? How did you feel standing there and being in it and accepting it in? Like, what was you feeling? How was your body? How was your mind? Like, because obviously there's physical sensations to these emotions. Like, we think it's just an emotion in our head, but there's physical sensations within your body as well.
Tired.
Yeah.
Scared. Excited, nervous, but yeah, the weekend, I took a Monday off I had no football on Saturday. So I had a Saturday, a Sunday and a Monday of just catching up and I felt extremely tired.
Mm.
And if you know me or if you spent any time with me, that's not usually an emotion I show.
No.
I felt like I had to absorb it.
Mm.
And that was, like I said, that's huge progress for me.
Yeah.
Like I spent much of my adult life feeling like, and this is not a sob story. It's not, because I'm in a much better place now, but I spent much of my adult life feeling like less than worthless, like a stain on the earth. I felt abhorrent and I felt that it was my duty to go out and help others. I think sometimes selfishly to make myself feel better. Mm. And last week I had this feeling of like, I'm going to help people, not because it's my duty to, because I'd like to.
Yeah.
And I think I have a valuable gift in being able to. And that's all new to me.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really new. So we're just exploring it as we go.
It's great. Like, it's just nice to just see you smile. Just you can see how happy you are, like the joyfulness.
Yeah.
Like, you can just see, obviously, the things we've said have been tough, and obviously there's more conversations to be had with that.
Yeah.
But I think you can just see the joy of expressing that, bringing that out, like allowing that to come forth. And I think that's what we kind of want to resonate with the listeners. And like, it's speaking about it, it does seem scary and it does seem tough. And obviously you don't know the reactions you're going to get and what's going to happen. But ultimately, your reaction is the reaction we want, and which will come once you kind of unburden yourself from what you've been going through.
And it was, I tell a story, I've told it lots of times about, we've discussed this. Will Smith tells a story originally about the fear of skydiving and how scared he is in the days leading up to this event and how much of a waste of his time that was. And it isn't until that moment when your legs are dangling out of an airplane about to be pushed that you should be a little bit scared. But it's in that moment when you are pushed out of an airplane that you are in your complete flight. You're flying.
Mm.
You are free.
Yeah.
And we've dangled our legs out of the airplane and we've been pushed and I feel free, but that's a new feeling.
Mm.
It's a new feeling and it's really cathartic and amazing for us to be having these conversations. Cause I can, for the listener, we've not had this chat.
No,
like
no.
This is completely raw and honest today. So I'm exploring how I feel and how we feel right now.
Yeah.
And I think in episodes to come, there's going to be tears and there's going to be pauses or moments of taking a breath because we are really are exploring this together live.
In real life, right this moment. It's been amazing, as you said, like the message we had, the kind of the support we've had has been so overwhelming. And just like yourself, it was like I had to take a moment for myself.
Mm.
It made me, like, I think I hadn't really processed putting out there what I'd said. I think like saying it and then seeing it myself, just like kind of between us before we kind of sent it out there, it's like, okay, that's quite heavy. But then to put it out there for people to see, I think that's when it really hit me, because I think throughout my career, maybe throughout my life, I've had a mask on and I've wanted people to portray me as the guy that's always got it together and I've got no issues and I'm cool, calm and collected. And then I think as soon as obviously that got sent out, that was kind of, that wasn't who I really was.
Yeah.
The real me came out. And I think that really, I don't say panicked me, but it was just like, oh, like now people are going to see what I was going through and how are people going to react to that? And are they going to look at me differently? And then to see all the messages, it was just really overwhelming and realized like so much good can come from this. Like it's been in me for so long and it got to a point where now I feel like I can get that out and I can share it. And obviously then to have that reaction from people, it's just been, I say, I've had to take a few days because like me, like energetically, physically, there's been a kind of energy that's come up within me that's kind of made me feel uncomfortable, maybe had to sit with it and realize that bad things don't always have to follow good things. This is a good thing, and embrace it and realize that it's going to be great for the two of us, for these conversations and what we're going to be talking about. But it's also going to be great for the people that this is going to go to and hopefully help them understand things that we may have gone through and they may be going through and how they can overcome it. But also what comes from unburdening yourself. It's not going to just be all rainbow straight away. There might be other things that come up within that.
Yeah.
But there's always the more you do it, the path becomes clear and the joy returns and you embrace stuff more.
And we want it to be interactive. We want it to be something where people can reach out, whether that's through the Instagram, through comments, through speaking to us directly about topics that they perhaps struggle with themselves or situations or different things. And we'd like to have this open format where we're going to share our ideas and our experiences and situations, but we'd love a community of people whereby they share their experiences, whether it's something they resonated with or whether it's something completely different. Yeah. And we can give an opinion or we can sort of have conversations about it on here. And I want to break that taboo around men doing this.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether we like it or not, whether you hear good things or not, it's not happening.
No.
I'm not speaking out of turn here. Whereas one of the things that worried you most about the pocket, you hadn't even spoken to your mum about some of this stuff.
Yeah. No, my mum, that's what we spoke about before it came out. I had to ring my mum. I had to ring my brother and sister to explain what was going on. Cause obviously what was coming out was real heavy stuff. And it was like, I hadn't told anyone. I hadn't Amber was probably the only person that really knew to the depth of, and I've spoke in podcasts here and there and dropped little bits, but kind of kept myself protected.
Yeah.
And obviously the journey that we've been on together, I think I wanted to be honest. And I know you want to be honest, because I think only honesty is the only thing that's going to get people to resonate with what we're doing and see how truly cathartic, how truly amazing this journey is when you really let go of it all, hold nothing in and let it all go. And obviously my mum, my brother and sister didn't really know a lot. They knew I was suffering to an extent, but like not what was going on. So I had to phone them and I had to say, look, just be mindful, these things are coming out. These are the things that I had been suffering through my career. I'm not in that place now. I'm healing, I'm working on it. So just if you have any questions, if you have any worries, don't be hesitate now to ask me. Ask me like all of it. Ask me all of it. And I'm open book. I will share with you what the situation was, why I was feeling that way.
Yeah.
And hopefully that will give them some peace, because they know I've been struggling. And I think it's difficult when someone you love is struggling and you don't know how to help them. So for me to now unburden myself, them to understand, I think hopefully that gives them a bit of peace and some answers to the questions that they maybe didn't have the answers to.
Feels like this is the next step in both our healing journeys. And again, to reiterate that point, by no means are we healed or would imagine that we are in a situation ever in our lifetime that we would be fully healed. We're constantly learning and we're constantly trying new things and this is part of our healing process as well. So there is going to be things throughout this process we're going to say that may change. Yeah. Like we have an opinion today, and we're also welcoming people to challenge us as well, because we're giving our opinion and something that we feel like is going to help people, or we feel like is quite heartfelt, or we feel is, we have a little bit of experience of, but we're no experts in this.
No.
Whatever this is. So it's going to be an open format. I want it to, and the guests we're going to have on are going to bring new situations and problems, if you will, and how we overcame them. And ultimately it's this, a path we're going to walk together, and we're it can be really lonely, but hopefully this is you've got some company now. And
I think that's what we want to create, isn't it? Like-minded people who are willing, willing to share, willing to, I say, unburden themselves of their worries, and helping each other solve the problem, helping each other heal. Say there's only so much we can do of our own healing, and there might be questions and conversations to be had with other people who will trigger us to understand more that what we need to heal. And I think that's what we want to do, is get people to always question themselves, have conversations, whether it's their belief, not their belief. And say, just learn from it.
Yeah.
We're all trying to improve. We're all trying to help each other, guide each other through to heal. And that starts with having conversations that might be difficult, and being truthful with yourself, and say, hopefully finding those answers as we all go along, and guiding ourselves in a direction that we want to be.
I just want to come back to something you said a couple of minutes ago. The mask.
Yeah.
Now, I know that feeling. Yeah. If I had a wardrobe full of masks, I had hundreds of them that I could put on.
Yeah.
And one for every situation. And it's only probably in this last couple of years that I'm not wearing one now.
Yeah.
But throughout my life, I've worn a different mask for different situations. And that's not necessarily always bad.
No.
Because sometimes you need to adapt to a certain situation to achieve an outcome.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Sometimes you need to present yourself in a way that maybe is slightly different to who you are for any given circumstances. Mm. Now, what we love about our loved ones and our partners is that we can be totally ourselves around them. Oh, hopefully we can. Yeah. And that's where you get that silly, funny version of yourself. And that's kind of falling in love, knowing that person. And that's one of the most beautiful experiences you can do. So why is it that we feel that in other situations, and football only highlights this, or even more sport, business, anything, that we feel we need to be so different to actually who we are? Because...
That's a great point, isn't it?
I had... so many masks. Like, I remember, like, I'm extremely feminine and sensitive, but I had a mask that made me feel like I was masculine and well hard, and I'd fight everyone.
Yeah.
Not that I'd ever want to fight in my life.
Yeah.
But I would wear that sometimes. And then I'd wear a mask that came filled with ego and bravado and almost toxic masculinity in certain situations. And then.
Were they masked to fit in?
You just must have fit in.
Do you think
to, I feel like I'm good at understanding people.
Yeah.
Which is hopefully why we're sat here. But that meant I was very good at kind of adapting to what I thought they wanted.
Yeah.
And the reality is when you're doing that so often for so many people, you're not actually pleasing anyone. And you're certainly not pleasing yourself. And no one's ever really getting the real version of you, the real beautiful uniqueness that is you, because you're just replicating something else you assume is what they want to see. And football is so, this is so prevalent in football. I know this because football teaches you to conform.
Yeah.
Football teaches you to go and be a slightly better version of someone else, but you wear the same clothes, listen to the same music, want the same things, sometimes sleep with the same women, like go on the same holidays. Yeah. And it's you can see it in wash bags, you can see it in caps, you can see it in Pete. Like it's so clear to see.
Yeah, yeah.
It's almost robotic, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you say it's that fitting in, it's that being part of something.
Yeah.
I think we all crave being part of something, so you kind of say put their masks on to be part of it. I think we're all scared to be our authentic self, because it brings in what do you call it, like people not liking you. It might not like your authentic self.
Yeah.
Your authentic self gets judged, and then it's easy to have a mask on and get judged for your mask rather than being judged on your authentic self. I think that people find that very difficult if you get judged on who you truly are. So I think it's, I think wearing a mask is easy because it's not really you and someone can judge you and it's not really you. But if you're your authentic self and then people start judging you, that's you, to your core.
Yeah.
I think that, and that, I think that hurts. And then, and that's how strong can you be in your true authentic self?
I remember, just as we talk about this now, two situations. So I did my work experience at Kettering Town and they were in the National League. And I mean, what a cool opportunity, just that I was just training with the team, really helping the physio out a little bit, filling up the ice baths, like pretending I was a bit of a footballer and a little bit of like a, because I wasn't at that point, I wasn't in an academy or anything like that. I still love football. And, I remember all the lads, so they did a fitness testing day and they all wore running trainers. So the very next day, I just realized it was just a fitness testing that was during pre-season. I just saw they were all wearing running trainers. So I thought, well, I'm going to wear running trainers the next day because that's what they're all doing. So I borrowed a pair of my dad's. They were size 10. I was about a size 6. Okay. I went to training the following day and they were all in boots now because they weren't doing running that day. And I had these big chunky running trainers on a borrow off my dad. I think I just nicked them off my dad. And I remember one of the players, one of the senior boys, battering me. And I remember him saying so clearly, fucking hell, mate, you got your dad's trainers on?
Yeah.
And I was like, nah. Yeah. I did. I very much did. And it was also about that time where the Nike Roche, do you know, the one with the weird toe, were really, like really cool.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle ones.
Yes. Yeah. That's all I wanted because all the lads are wearing them after football. In the same way lads would wear Crocs now, for example, they were wearing the Nike Roches. So my birthday was coming up. That's all I wanted. I wanted Nike Roches. So I, from a young age, I'd looked up to those people and wanted to replicate them. And then I saw it, you see it with wash bag culture. Everyone wants to have the same wash bag, whether that be LB or Goyard now or anything else. And listen, it's okay to have nice things, to appreciate them, but it's almost like a uniform.
Yeah.
D-squared caps was another one.
Yeah.
When D-squared cap, the icon cap.
Yeah.
How many footballers did you see wearing the icon cap? I'm not saying it's a bad hat. I'm not admit this in the brand, but it become like a uniform.
Yeah. It become their calling card. You'd spot a footballer a mile off.
Of course you could.
With what they're wearing.
And I fell into that trap as well. Yeah. But again, that's what football teaches you.
Yeah.
To conform, to not step. It's military-like in some ways, which is kind of what led to you in what we talked about in a previous episode, that element of it's so structured. When you come into the real life, when do you eat?
Yeah.
Where's my tracksuit?
Yeah.
Where's my slip? All this was done for me.
Yeah.
What the fuck do I do now?
You have to find yourself. That's the thing. And it's, you can kind of, as I said, you can, in football, you can wear a mask. You can hide these things. And that, when that mask's attacked, it's fine. It's a mask. Trying to be your true self in football is very, very difficult. To step out of a crowd, I think in life in general, to step out of a crowd and to stand in your power and say, this is me, this is true to who I am.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter who you are, what you say to me, I will stick to this.
Yeah.
That is one of the most powerful things you can accept in.
Oh, and the reality is our heroes are those things.
Mm.
You think about the best people you've been involved with in football, the people you love most, the people you look up to, or the people you have, they've been really real.
Mm.
They've done things their way.
Yeah.
And people have then tried to replicate them. They've done things their own way.
Yeah.
It's the same. So this is obviously going to be, is male led because that's the environment we're talking to. But I say it to some of my female clients all the time. Like when Beyonce is on stage doing her thing, like being a boss bitch, being a really kind of proud, independent woman, they're championing it.
Yeah.
But when it comes to their time to kind of own their stuff and be proud of what they do, it's almost self-deprecation is built within them. It's not cool to actually say, I've owned this, I've done really, really well with it. I see that so often, but yet our heroes, we champion them for being exactly those things. But
as we said, it's imposter syndrome.
Imposter syndrome.
And you say we all love the people at the top, we love seeing them and what they're doing. And you say, as soon as it comes to taking ownership of it yourself, I'm not good enough to do that. I can't do that. But it's that we all have it in us. We all can do it. It's just that imposter, that little person on your shoulder saying, oh, no, you're not good enough. You can't do it. Like, what if this person judges you? What if that person says something? And I think that's a big part of people's issues or what they struggle with is accepting themselves for who they are and not worrying about what people said. And for me, playing football, I was always worried about what everyone else was saying, always worried about the judgment, always worried about if I was good enough, like my performances or my perception of myself could hinge on 5-6 people on social media saying that I was really good.
5,000 may have said you're really good, but one may have said you're bad. Yeah, I bet you listen to the one.
Yeah. And that's how my perception would be. It'd always be, you say, self-deprecating. It would be like bringing myself down, but the positives far outweighed the negatives, but I'd always focus on the negatives.
Yeah.
And I think we're all like that. And I think it's that case of, oh, when things are going well, it's always that it's going to go wrong some point. So self-sabotage, I might as well sabotage it now before it gets really good. So
what we're talking about now reminds me of a quote, one of my favorite quotes. And I won't do the whole thing, but part of it says kind of, you're playing small does not serve the world. There is no glory in shrinking so other people like you. And it's, I can't remember exactly who said it now. It's actually from a film, Coach Carter, but there's original, is a bit more to it than that. But it's that you're playing small does not serve the world, and there is no glory in dumbing yourself down. Mm. But we do it.
Yeah.
And actually, by shining your own light, you liberate others to do the same. That is the end of that quote.
Yeah.
When you shine your own light, you liberate others to do the same. And I remember much of my 20s being spent wearing a mask to be something I thought I wanted to be, something I thought others wanted me to be, probably more so. And it wasn't until I actually started scratching the surface of authenticity that I started seeing success in that.
Mm.
And this is the perfect example of it. I'm trying to be more authentic in what I'm doing by having these real conversations with you here. And we felt some success from that. We felt some support.
Yeah.
Yet still, we sit here a little bit scared of it.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
It is. It's just being human. It's being human, those emotions that come up. It's learning to be with them. It's learning to go back to your authentic self. And I think that's where it stems from. Like, I don't know if you ever know when you first stopped being your authentic self.
Mm.
And obviously that's probably then when, as you were growing from then, the same as me, learning to fit into groups of people, maybe at school and stuff like that. And then never really truly focusing on who you truly were.
I've never thought about that question, but I think back to my childhood now, and I remember being very tearful all the time over anything. I would just cry, and shame quickly followed that.
Mm.
So I become hardened to it later in life, and it wasn't until I started finding out who I was a bit more. I thought, that's okay to do that.
Mm.
It's okay to be emotional. It's okay to be a man who is physically strong, but also cries.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
But I remember that in my very early years.
Yeah.
I remember being teased at school for crying a lot.
Yeah.
Over nothing. Not even like falling over in Grey's Anatomy. It wasn't something like that. It would be over situations. I remember going into JJB as a kid and walking out with nothing, because I just so wanted some football stuff. Just crying.
Yeah.
Not because I was having a strop. I was just so sad that experience was over, like being in JJB and I got nothing from it. Like, even as I grew older, I remember like watching things like The X Factor and someone being voted out and feeling really emotional about that. And I've had conversations with friends where they've looked at me and said, I'd love to be in your head sometimes because you experience highs like so high. Like I could be having a coffee and I can't even fathom how incredible I'm feeling. I'm like, this is the best coffee I've ever had. I'm sitting with you in this moment. It's incredible. Like the sun's coming in. The company's good. It tastes good. Like it's amazing. And my mate will be like, it's just a nice coffee, but I agree, bro. Like that's lovely.
Yeah.
But in the same breath, someone could say one thing like, you look tired. And my day's over.
Mm.
It confirms everything I've ever wanted to know about myself.
Yeah.
Like I'm wrong.
Yeah.
And it's a gift. It's a curse. It's It's hard.
Like, it's, and then it says it's I'm picking these behaviors, I'm picking these things that we believe to be true about ourselves, yeah, which ultimately aren't. And obviously the conversation we had previous, it's getting all these things out. Let's stop them sitting in our head and becoming bigger than they actually need to be. Like, and obviously I said, like finding each other, finding a lot of other people that want to be brave, want to kind of take that step and start healing, getting those things out of their head. And this is the whole, let's say, the podcast, obviously the conversations is what we want. We want to be honest. We want to get these things out.
Yeah.
We want to heal ourselves. We want to find our true authentic self. And it's not going to be one podcast and we've said stuff and we're healed and we're now our true authentic self. It's going to take practice. It's going to take time. It's going to take lots of conversations with each other. It's going to take lots of conversations with other people, hard conversations with family, friends, ourselves, to just keep digging at it and keep digging at it. And it will get tough, but there'll always be people around. And this is what we want to give people. We want to be around. We want to create a community where there's always people around to help pick you up and keep without pushing judgment. You. Yeah, helping you find your authentic self. And each person's authentic self is going to look completely different.
Yeah.
But
not, that's the beauty of it as well.
Yeah. We're not here to judge you or anything. Yeah. We want you to find who you truly are. And we want to keep helping you picking away to find that underneath. And that's what we want to do.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so. And I think there's many ways in which we can do that. Uniqueness is the beauty in this. We hope by, I think conversation is a pillar of a number of avenues you can use to be successful in this journey.
Mm.
Conversation is always at the foundation of that for me. I wanted to touch upon something I said in the previous episode where actually I championed the fact that I wasn't taking any medication.
Mm.
And I felt some guilt attached to that because actually medication worked for me for a period of time. Actually, it really helped me for a period of time. But yeah. I'm in a space now whereby I feel better without it. So I wasn't dismissing the idea that medication could be of real help to some people. Same thing with my sobriety. Like my issues were with alcohol and cocaine.
Mm.
They're the things I completely cut. Whereas actually that there are some plant medicines out there which I've seen kind of firsthand and through friends and information that can be really helpful as well. So it's again, I'm sharing what's working for us without trying to dismiss anything at all, because what works for me may be different for someone else. And again, it's just sharing that experience of it. So we talked about your thoughts on that as well, because, and I'd like to kind of revisit where we were in your conversation when you were at Brighton and you had an intervention and medication was offered to you I'll let you take over from here. Like you explain that story.
So obviously we spoke about Brighton and the times I had there and the suicide thoughts and it was combination with a major injury. So I ruptured my Achilles at Brighton. So that put me up for 13 months.
Yeah.
So that was really tough. That was like, again, I think the blessing I had in that period of time was my partner had our first child, Isla. I think that really grounded me. I think if that could have sent me over the edge a little bit, kind of, I said at the time it would help. It was kind of a nice way of being out of football.
Mm-hmm.
But I think obviously also the monotony of being in the dressing, in the changing rooms, you kind of lose track of where the players are. I think just having that kind of something outside of football was a blessing. So having Isla was great. And it was, I think that was a real good, let's say, grounding point. I came back from the injury, way overweight. Like I was,
I can't imagine,
but not like fat overweight. But I was like more muscle, because like you can't really use your legs.
Yeah,
you spend time doing all this stuff in the gym. So I came back and I was like 7 kilos overweight, but with muscle. So I was like so much bigger, so much heavier than I was previously. So then it's mad, because then I was having to refine who I was as a player. So I was a like strong, quick, accelerating player. And then I became a bit more heavy. And I think that was a real tough tough point to try and actually reinvent myself as a player, like having to know that I couldn't do the things I used to be able to do.
Yeah.
And that had its own kind of stresses, because it's like I was getting angry at my body because it wasn't doing what I expected it to be doing. And then I was very good at kind of being really degrading to myself, my body. Like I'd still go in the gym and smash the gym and that, but I was always like, oh, my body's not good enough. It's useless. It's ruining it. And like, why is it doing this? Why it should be doing this? So I'd had all those thoughts and just again, loads of shame over not like, oh my God, I had a career ending injury and I could have been out and never played again. Like I fought my way back and my body was there all the way with me and it got me back to playing. And I played another season in the championship with Brighton that season. But it just wasn't right. It wasn't physically right. And yeah. I spoke to the manager, Chris Hughton, at the time, and he was just like, you're not quite right. So we're not going to keep you. And I knew that in myself. I knew where I wasn't where I needed to be. So that kind of ended. And then...
Just pause there for a second. When you're feeling that about yourself, and then the person... This is football. It's not any individual's fault. But to then have it confirmed to you by the person in charge.
Yeah.
Like, no other industry really would ever just say to you... You've had this really like potentially career ending injury. We're not happy with you, how you are physically, even though you've worked really, really hard and you're trying your best, that we don't want you anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
How is the human brain supposed to cope with that?
Yeah, it was difficult. But I think
I'm hurt now hearing it.
Yeah. I think I was a little bit, I understood because I knew in games like where I was, like how I was previous and then how I was at that moment in time. So I knew it was coming. I knew it was coming. So it was just kind of like, I was already prepared for it. So it wasn't that big a shock. I would love to have stayed another year because I felt like another year I probably would have got myself right. But I kind of understood. But it was obviously my time had come at the end, finished at Brighton. I never really showed the fans and what I could really do. I think that was a frustrating thing of kind of leaving, knowing that they never really saw the real me, like through mental challenges and through the physical injuries and stuff like that. And they never really saw the real me. So that was a kind of a disappointing, frustrating period. Then obviously I came out of that end of contract and then there was never really like too many clubs interested. It was very quiet. And then John Steele, who was a manager of Luton, who took me to Dagenham when I was younger, wanted to sign me. And they were League Two and Brighton were the Championship. So in hindsight, I probably should have waited longer.
Yeah.
But because of like just being scared of not no one wanting me and like maybe people not thinking I was a player I used to be and all that worry and fear, like I kind of took the chance, like dropping all the way down to League Two because I just felt like it was a bit safer, like I should do well at League Two. So I ended up joining Luton. And again, like I probably wasn't right physically, still battling things in my head. And again, now obviously I came in, everyone was like, oh, League Two signing, like the best signing in League Two for however, obviously Luton being a massive club. And again, it just didn't go how I wanted it to go. Like I wasn't really scoring. Again, I was just like too heavy. Mm-hmm. Couldn't seem to shift the weight. I couldn't get the weight off. I'd be training, doing extra training to try and do it. I'd be doing stupid things. So on a Friday, trying to get sharper, I'd be jumping over hurdles with weights and then I'd be like...
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like when you think about that, it's actually fucking mental.
Yeah.
12 hours before a game. Like to be doing that.
Yeah.
But that the spinning wheel inside your head and I'm listening to you now and I'm able to reframe this now and I'm thinking that the best signing in League Two for an up and coming team expected to go up. Like it's not necessarily like you're still a professional athlete. You're still competing for a team that ended up going to the Premier League a few years later, like who took players from that level all the way to the Premier League with them. And we could have reframed it and said, I'm starting a new challenge. My career looks a little bit different now. I've changed the player. I'm going to start again and build from there. Mm. But you don't do it. As you were talking about it, it was almost that feeling of being last pick in school again.
Yeah.
Like I'm just going to go there because...
Yeah.
What?
I know, it's mad, isn't it?
And I'm hearing this now as your friend and getting angry. I feel animated. Yeah, I feel upset. But so many other lads are dealing with this.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah, yeah.
January, transfer window. Like, this is happening right now.
Yeah.
And my level's very, very different. But playing in non-league football has taken me to the age of 32 to realise I'm best to be playing where I'm loved and where I feel happy.
Yeah.
And I've had offers to go and play two divisions higher and one divisions higher in the last week. One of those teams is top of the division above and the other one is doing well at the level up from that. And I said no to both. And I'm at a different stage in my career, but it felt great.
Mm.
I said, I'm really enjoying my football, playing at a relatively low level in non-league, but like, it's the same ethos. It's the same thing. It's just on a different scale. Yours just involves perhaps more figures of money and more fans and more responsibility, but it's the same feeling. And I wish I could tell my younger self, you're going to be at your best where you're loved.
But I think happiness is a luxury is seen in football. Like, it's all about like, just keep going. You've got to get to the Premier League. You've got to get this lot. And it's not like you stop somewhere and you're happy and you're earning good money. It's like, how much money can you earn? How much further up the leagues can you go? It's always like, go. Yeah. There's never like, and I don't know too many players who are like that. We go, I'm happy here and I'm earning good money. I'm in a good place.
But please don't misinterpret what I'm saying here. This is different because I'm at a different stage in my career. I wish I could tell my younger self to play where I feel happy and where I feel loved, because then my potential to achieve more would surpass the ceiling I was potentially putting onto it.
Yeah.
And I have this conversation with players now. In my gym, people will come in and say, I must score 20 by Christmas or by the end of the season or whatever. This has got to happen or this. And I say, why? Why?
Yeah.
If you were to get 19 assists and score 10 goals and win the league, you had a bad year. No. Okay, so but you're telling me you have to score 20 or by the end of the season. What if you get 20 by Christmas? Do you stop?
Yeah.
There's another 4 or 5 months of the season. Do you just give up then because you've already achieved what you want to achieve? No, you don't. You'd go and surpass what you already, the ceiling you put on yourself. I'm not saying don't have aspirations and don't have goals and don't have dreams. Absolutely have those things.
Mm,
but I've found more so now in allowing myself to just be happy and be present and find that flow state wherever that is. Not only will you achieve those things, you will surpass them. And this is what's happening in my career now. I used to sit at a desk and dream of the fact that like of only just being a PT.
Yeah.
I have to pinch myself sometimes because a few years on, I now run a gym where I train international athletes and I'm doing a podcast with another international athlete helping young men. I'm living out my dream. And how did I get there? By just being my fucking self.
Yeah.
Took me till I was 28, 29, 30. Like, by just being myself. And I'm realizing that as I have this, conversation.
100%.
So maybe I am good enough.
Yeah.
At whatever I'm meant to be, maybe I'm good enough. And that, it didn't look like what others put upon me.
Yeah.
It looked different to that. And it's even more beautiful than I ever imagined.
Yeah.
That I ever fucking imagined. So who's to say that Craig, that physically stronger Craig couldn't have been an even better player than the quick, sharp Craig that you had.
But that's the thing, isn't it? It's reframing it. And we always reframe things to be the negative rather than reframing it to be a positive.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's like, and that's the position I was in, was reframing everything for a negative, where there's always two sides. I could, as you say, I could have refrained it to a positive and I could have gone, okay, this is who I am now. This is how it's going to help me. This can change my game in this way.
Yeah.
This is the positive it's going to bring.
I'm going to be better back to goal than I am in behind. Like, I'm going to change. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was that negative thing. Like, not a back myself and say, oh yeah, like this is amazing, Craig. Like, be your biggest cheerleader. You can do this.
Yeah.
It was like, no, you like, that's not you. Like, you, this is the player you was. So this is the player you should be for all the time. And it's the same as being a person. Like, this is who you are. You should always be that person.
Yes.
And as soon as you start changing yourself, and you probably would have gone through that, becoming your authentic self, people would have started dropping away because you're not the gym that you should be. You're the gym that you know you should be. And I think that's like, so important just as in general in life.
It's life as well as football, isn't it? Our aim with this is for it to help everyone that we can possibly help, particularly men, but And obviously we're talking about sport, but this has, this crosses over with business relationships, with
it's,
life.
It's life, 100%,
and,
yeah.
And change is fucking beautiful.
Yeah.
But I'm so scared. Like, yeah. All the good things that have happened in my life came about through change.
Yeah.
Yeah. If someone uses my locker at the gym, I'm annoyed. Or someone's parking in my car parking space. There's no, it's not my car park. It's just where I usually park.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, well, how dare they? Who is this person invading my space? The reality is, one of the most dangerous phrases in the English language is, but we've always done it this way.
Yeah.
And I fell so into that category. But I've always played this way. But I've always been quick, sharp, quick.
Like, and I've always fought this way.
So what we can do now is help others in this situation see themselves more beautifully or see themselves more uniquely, and to embrace that. And I really hope through these conversations and through working alongside us that we can help more and more people see this and reframe and embrace change and embrace the situations, because all the shittiest things that has happened to me in life have made me better.
Mm. Yeah, 100%. I think, as you say,
and I'm lucky to be able to say that, because I haven't been killed by disease, and I'm lucky that I haven't been to many funerals, which is, I'm very lucky, touch wood.
Yeah.
But all of the things that I would look back on as something that felt very negative at the time are the only reason I'm sat here today living my dream doing this with you. The only reason.
I think I resonate with that. I think you say I think that's when you... The hard things come, you have to change.
Yeah.
You have to change. Otherwise you get stuck in that rut of it just being negative all the time. You don't look at when it's all positive, you never look at change to an extent, because everything's going so well. The only time you ever really, really look at change is when it's all going wrong.
And football's just fucking opinions as well.
Yeah.
Let's get that out there as loud as we can.
Yeah.
Because that version of Craig may not have worked for Brighton at that time, but let me fucking tell you, it would have worked for a hell of a lot of other teams.
Yeah. But I think when you are searching for something that's not inside yourself, when you're looking for that recognition, when you're looking for validation, when you're looking for someone to tell you you're doing well, like you accept other people's judgments, you accept people's beliefs of you. And when you become a bit stronger and you can then go, no, that's not me. Mm. That's when things change. But when you like I said, I'm like a people pleaser. I wanted to make sure everyone was happy before I was happy. That was it. If the crowd's happy and like the manager's happy and they're happy, then obviously it's like I could be playing left wing, but everyone else is happy. Then great. But if I'm not, my feelings when I was playing football was last. Like, it didn't matter what I felt, as long as like I was doing the right thing for the team, or I was doing the right thing for the fans, or I was doing this. Like, brilliant. Don't worry about what I feel. I just stick it down. I just keep pushing it down inside.
And you wonder why you got lost.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And we wonder why we got lost. I'm saying it to you and to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's scary.
It is.
But I think another really important point to note here is that what we seek, especially in this day and age, isn't what actually fulfills us. You might think it's the roar of the crowd, or goals at the end of the season, or likes on an Instagram post, or a girl, a car. It's never those things, is it?
No.
They're all part of those changing goalposts. And the reality is, to help you to go and succeed, if you're aspiring to achieve some of those things, goals at the end of the season and validation, and thing, you have to find yourself.
Yeah.
And you have to find yourself.
Really interesting thing is, so there's probably one, this is, I wouldn't say it's mad, but like there were good seasons in my career, but the one season I just was me and just relaxed, didn't let any of the pressure get to me, didn't worry about what people were saying, whether I was scoring or wasn't scoring, just played football for the enjoyment of playing football and being me. I scored 35 goals in the season and got called up to Scotland. And then I couldn't replicate that when I went to Brighton, because I then went back to the old way of, I've got to impress, I've got to do this, I've got to do that. But that's that one season where I didn't let anything affect my peace and just was just me. I scored 35 goals.
It's hard for me not to ask. It's hard for me not to ask because I don't want you to try and replicate it. And yeah, it's not going to work now how you, because you're not playing football anymore. Yeah. So you can't replicate that again.
Yeah.
But where were you at in your life? What was happening? Because that was you.
Yeah.
That was you in your purest form. That was you in your flow state.
Yeah.
What, for someone who'd been so, and to this day, we both are kind of aware of the noise around us. Mm. We find it hard to shut off from that. So yeah. What happened in that moment where you could just be you?
I read a book and it was cool. Well, I read a couple of books. One was, what was it called? I can't think of it now. It's gone out of the head.
We'll come back. We'll write it down at some point. But what was the message?
It was basically, it's feel the fear and do it anyway.
Feel the fear and do it anyway. Okay.
So it's like, this is the kind of the first time when I probably started reading books.
Yeah.
Again, Amber got me onto them. She started reading a book called A Millionaire Mind. I started laughing at her. She started to kind of change her personality, and there's different growth that I saw in her. Mm-hmm. So then she had this book, and so she gave it to me, and it was Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And it was basically anything that comes up and you feel that fear, you do it. Like, and it was just a case of that season. It was just, don't be scared. Don't be scared to be me. Don't be scared to miss a chance. Don't be scared to not score a goal. Just be me, and just whatever comes up, feel the fear and do it.
It's beautiful.
And it was just the most liberating thing that season. It just felt like everything flowed. Just everything was just like that. I wasn't scared to do anything. I wasn't scared to like say something back to someone, which I normally would. I'd normally just take stuff in, but yeah. I'd stood my ground and I'd say something. I went in that season, I think I'd scored like 14 goals, and I think the manager at the time, it was Gary Johnson. He had a go at me at the end of a game, and I was a bit pissed off because I was like, I've scored 14 goals so far this season. It wasn't even Christmas. Mm. I was like, you're having a go at me. So like, I pulled him and I was like, what's going on? Why are you having a go at me? Which I'd never do. And then he was like, he explained to me, well, you're not doing this right, and we need more of that. And I was like, okay. So I added that into my game, and my game just grew from there.
Amazing.
So I wasn't scared. I felt that fear and I did it. And when I spoke to him and speaking within that fear, I got great advice that took me beyond where I was at that moment in time.
I felt that
was just like, that book had a turning point in my life at that moment, that season, which got me a move to Brighton. But then I ultimately reverted back to the old Craig.
Yeah.
I was still reading, but like probably not taking it in as much. And again, I let all the pressure and all the expectations, all that stuff overtake me.
It's hard because I was having a conversation with a young player the other day who wanted to ask, training well, played a little bit at the start of the season and wasn't in the team and wanted to ask the question of the manager as to why he wasn't even in the squad anymore.
Mm.
Wasn't even in the 11v11s in training, like wanted to know why. And for someone who's not been a professional football player, I said, well, why don't you just ask him?
Mm.
And he said, sort of try, but I can't really do that.
Mm.
I just thought, why? And this is not that player's fault and not necessarily the manager's fault. There needs to be a cultural shift.
Mm.
Not to leave with shame, but to leave with honest critique, like the ability to say to you, you may have scored 14 all season, but I want this from you to improve your game, and the willingness to be able to accept that and to move forward with it. That's incredible.
Mm.
And it worked out.
Mm.
So why? I'm supposed there's lots of people who are doing this in the right way, but there's plenty that aren't still. And what? Why can't we create this space whereby honest, open feedback is welcomed? Because I find this is just my experience, and you will know better than I. You don't go and knock on a manager's door all the time and ask a question, and in the same sense, they don't come to you and say, "Let me help you with this."
Yeah.
And I hope that through our voice, we can even if we just touch one person, one manager, one player, and we can change this. Because honest communication is the only way you get anywhere.
Mm.
And every player I speak to just wants honest communication.
Yeah,
I don't mind if you don't think I'm good enough, or I don't fit your mold, or I'm not your sort of player. Please just be honest with me.
Yeah.
Don't drag me along to the end of the season and then just say, I'm not going to renew your deal, off you go. Like, don't tell me. I mean, I had another situation with a player recently. This comes to the physical element, whereby in and out of the team, feeling a little bit low, and they questioned his attitude. He's just shy. He doesn't go around shouting about things. He's just quite a shy player. Mm. The managers are quite used to kind of quite loud, boisterous players, and that's okay. That's their style. But this guy, I liken it to the duck swimming calmly on the surface. Doesn't mean their feet aren't kicking really, really fast underneath, right? And so from a physical perspective, they'd said to him, had an injury and said, if you get an injection for this, we'll play you. Had the injection, still not playing him. Like, and now he feels lied to.
Yeah.
He feels like he was made to do something that could potentially have a longer term effect on his body. He was willing to do that for them and they still let him down.
Yeah.
So how do you rebuild trust in situations like that? How do you even, and this is happening every day up and down the country.
It's difficult as a player though, because you want to play. Like you want to play the game. Like you love the game. You want to play it, and you like you will do stuff you're asked to do.
I would have done the same thing as him.
Yeah,
but it's not okay.
No, it's not, because you're putting them in a position where they might be going against something that they believe in and they don't want to do, but you're kind of holding them at ransom because they want to play, and the only way they're going to play at that moment in time is by doing what you're telling them to do. But then obviously not to do it, for them to do it and none not play him, that's just mind games. It's just like, then as a player, you're like, well, if I do it next time, am I going to play? If I don't do it, if he says something to me, can I believe what he's going to say to me now? Like, it then puts you in a dilemma of like, you just get, you're lost a little bit within that kind of what you're going to get from that manager now.
I can almost guarantee you, your favourite manager you've played under, doesn't even have to say who it is, but I know who the favourite manager I've played under is, and they were my most honest manager.
Mm.
I didn't always play for them.
Yeah.
I didn't always play well for them. It wasn't my best years in football, I wouldn't say, but my favourite person I ever worked under was the most honest.
Yeah. And they give you the confidence to just still ask questions.
Yeah.
And then get true answers.
Because I think that feeling, and this is, the unknown, not being aware of where you stand is a really hard place to be. So if you're you like a girl and you don't know if she likes you back, or you like a guy, whatever, however you, this is like, it, that limbo, that unknown is so hard.
Yeah.
Is such a debilitating feeling, and you would do anything just to find out how they feel about you. Football, this is...
Like, that's where you make your answers up. That's where you make false truths up. So you say you're that unknown, you don't know what's going on. We majority of us want to clear that unknown. We want to know what's coming. We need to know. We can't just sit in that unknown and allow it to unfold. We have to fill that with something. And it's not always what's truly happening or the answer is. We just have to fill it.
Yeah.
Because our body's going, I don't know what's coming, So you get so apprehensive. We can't just sit in that unknown and go, okay, whatever's going to come, like you said, the flow state, whatever's going to come, you let it come and I will deal with it accordingly. But we have to go, no, I've got to put that, the manager's not said anything to me, he doesn't like me, he's not going to pick me. Like, it's never anything good either. It's always like, what, he doesn't like me, or like he's this. So I just think it's just an instinct in us. We just can't have an unknown. We have to fill it with something that's just way out of what is actually happening. And that's where you probably, and like me as well, we're trying to sit in the unknown. This is the unknown. This is getting all the stuff out of us that has been living in us. And it's the unknown of what's going to come back from it.
Yeah, so but where like some of our fears coming from.
And so to sit in the unknown now for me and you, doing the podcast, obviously not knowing the reactions that we're going to get from people I felt that with the reaction we got when we got all that love. It's like, oh, it's in the unknown. I don't know what's going to come back. I don't know what people are going to say, like how they're going to react. And then that overwhelmingness of trying to fill it with something, like they might not like it. They're going to judge me. But really working on myself, and I know you will be, is like, okay, I'm going to sit in that unknown. I'm going to allow the answers to come and not try to fill it with anything. And I'm comfortable and I'm strong enough, getting stronger in myself,
getting better. Yeah,
getting better in myself to allow the unknown to unfold.
I think honesty breeds honesty as well. Like, and it's always a two-way street.
Yeah.
And I know that particularly well in my relationship now. Like, I would just tell, I could lie to myself enough times that I believe my own shit. I know that. I've told stories in the past so often that I actually start to believe my own fucking stories.
Yeah.
And it isn't until I actually really think, oh God, that didn't actually happen like that.
Yeah.
and I really mean this. And it isn't until recently, especially like go back to my relationship, was I tell little white lies all the time to keep everyone happy, people pleasing. And I still have some guilt with regards to this, but even simple stuff like, what time are you home, babe? And if I was drinking, it was never going to be soon.
Mm.
Oh, 10 minutes, I'm leaving now, 10 minutes. An hour later, I'm still there. I'd never had any intention of leaving.
Yeah.
And I'm in a position now whereby with Holly, my current partner, we just really honest with each other. And it has created this space where I can't explain how safe I now feel within that and how loved I feel and how I can love back. And I'm really more aware of my role as a partner. I think being a football player, I wanted a new hat, the new car, and I wanted a fit bird.
Yeah.
That's all I kind of thought my role was in this, was to get a fit bird and then kind of, that's my accessory.
Yeah, yeah.
That's wrong. I'm not saying that's right, but that's how I treated it.
You said you were lying, sorry. Why were you lying? What were you getting from it? Or what were you hiding from it?
It's a really hard question.
It's a
really hard question. What was I gaining from lying? It's really hard because there is no gain from it, really. I got a bit extra time out with the boys. Like, I didn't want to, I was trying to keep them happy, or like, I was always just trying to keep everyone happy.
Yeah.
And in that example, I was essentially keeping the ex happy by saying I was home sooner, but keeping the boys happy by just staying out longer.
Yeah.
And the reality is, I didn't even know if I wanted to stay out or go home, or I just wanted everyone, again, I wanted everyone to be happy. But gladly, I'm now in a space where I have this honesty.
Yeah.
And it creates this relationship, which is so... I feel so powerful with it. I feel so together. I feel so
not hiding anything.
Like a team. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I feel like a team. And we've had to have some really shit conversations. Fuck. We've had to have some things that I've had to say, things I never wanted to say.
Yeah.
I've had to be honest about stuff I never wanted to be honest about. But my God, it's so liberating.
Mm.
So let's link that back now to football. If we can get honest with each other, and if we can get honest in that hierarchy as well, from the top down,
yeah,
I think we create platforms for people to go and not only just achieve what you're hoping to achieve, but to go and surpass that in ways they never even imagined.
Mm.
And I don't think we're gonna get to that point. I don't think where we're gonna go and surpass or what are our wildest dreams until we can get really authentic and really honest.
Yeah,
because there's always a ceiling to it. There's always a ceiling when you're pretending to be something you're not, because especially when you're trying to replicate something, you're only ever going to get quite as good as perhaps the thing you're trying to replicate. And in most cases, never quite as good.
Yeah.
So we have to be able to breed this authenticity, and that is going to come from the top down in football. Allowing people to make mistakes and say, "Oh, like, it's get on the ball." It's those people who give you that freedom. Get on the ball regardless of the fact you just gave it away.
Do you know the best place I had that in my career was Wickham.
Yeah.
So I joined Wickham after leaving Luton. Didn't go as well as I hoped. I had another major injury there, broke my ankle, came to the end of my Luton career, not wanted. I think I was 34, 35 then. And I got a phone call from Wickham saying, like, come down, like, we'd love you to come and be part of the team. Like, we've got a bit of an older team. So I went down, and we had an older team. We had me, kind of Adam Alab, Sam Saunders, Akin Fenwar, Nathan Tyson. So an old group of players all kind of being told, you're not good enough anymore. Don't need you. Like, kind of like Wickham were being touted as relegation favourites.
Mm.
But I met a group of lads there who wanted to be themselves, and everyone was championed at being themselves. Manager Gareth Ainsworth was fantastic. He kind of allowed the dressing room to kind of rule itself.
Yeah.
So he had like generals who'd kind of take the instructions from Gareth, and then he'd obviously bring it down into the dressing room, like Bayo, Adam, like, so big names, big voices, big people, but you were allowed to be who you were within that dressing room.
Yeah.
You were allowed to be your authentic self. There was obviously always standards, and all the boys, the older boys, set the standards. We worked hard, we grafted, we did all the right things in the morning. Like, it was a competition who could get in the morning, the first to do the gym work. It was who could stay the longest before they had to leave. So people were leaving at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
So you just felt comfortable in that dressing room, like being who you are, wearing what you wanted to do, like kind of doing the things that you needed to do to be you. Mm. Obviously, you say like Akinfenwa Bayo, amazing character, could just be himself.
Yeah.
And he just oozed kind of, it was just love and appreciation for others. But there was also that you've got to grind. If you want to be yourself, you've got to still put it in for the team. It would give you that kind of space to be your authentic self, but you've got to come and bring everything you've got to this team.
So by someone else being their authentic self,
yeah,
it liberated you to do the same.
Yeah. And we became stronger from it. Whereas you'd think, oh, if we've all got to be the same kind of person, the team will be stronger. It wasn't. Yeah. It was like, you get to be you. You get to be you. You get to be you. Bring your authentic self, but bring that work with it.
Get to be you.
Yeah.
You get to be you.
Yeah.
What a fucking beautiful thing to give to someone.
Oh, massive. And you could just see, like, you know, when you're wearing that mask, you can tell, and you can feel it. When you go into a room and you know everyone's their authentic self, you can just feel everyone's so at ease with themselves. Yeah. There's no competition with each other. There's no like fighting for this place. There's no fighting for that position. Like, it was amazing. We had like an amazing squad, and it was like, if you were in the squad, you would work your ass off to stay in that squad. Mm. If you weren't in a team, you were supporting the life out of those players. You'd be there like, on the sidelines. You'd be there in the stand, like screaming the boys on. Like, it was just like the atmosphere was just like within the dressing room. Like, that's why I don't think we wanted to go home. And I think that's why we wanted to get in early.
Wow.
Because you wanted to be around that. It was just like, it was so magnetic. And that season we were told we were going to get relegated and we got promoted. And it was just like, it just showed what you could do when everyone was just themselves.
Yeah.
Gave them that ability to be themselves. And then obviously for that's, I was there for 3 years and I was in and out a bit. But those 3 years I was there, we went from League Two to the Championship, which was a phenomenal story for a team that didn't.
You thought you were done?
Huh?
You thought you were done?
But that's that time was just so amazing to be around, and the people that came in and the people that went out, like even the people that left the club would always come back to the games and come back into the dressing room and come back to the gym because they just loved being around the boys. And I'll always remember like the season we got promoted to the Championship. Again, I wasn't involved as much, but we had like, it was COVID. So COVID hit and obviously you weren't allowed fans in the grounds and stuff like that. But like we were playing, so like obviously the playoff games and then the final at Wembley, there was no one there. Mm. All you could hear was all the Wickham players. Mm. So I wasn't playing that day. So I was in the stand a bit further up with the boys that weren't playing and the subs. And all you could hear was us shouting, screaming and cheering the boys on to success. Like we played Oxford and Oxford were just sitting there and they were very quiet and they didn't really say much. Like we were up off the seats. Mm. Like obviously at the time you meant to wear a mask and we had our masks off. We were screaming,
can't
shouting.
Can't fake that though, can you?
No. And that was built and that was like the offense. Like I said, everyone could be who they wanted to be and everyone would die for each other in that dressing room. And I think that's just like, it just epitomizes like what life should be like. We should all be able to be our authentic self, be championed to be our authentic self, because so much more is created from being that.
Yeah.
It's not fitting in. It's not like being another jigsaw in that same puzzle. It's being different. It's being who you truly are and giving someone space to be who they truly are, knowing that you've got a common goal and the next one and the next one. And you just build a foundation. And obviously Wickham is still, I think they're still obviously keeping that premise because they're second in the League One and they're looking like they're pushing some promotion.
Yeah.
So it's a structure that's not so much based on the football. The football takes care of itself.
I haven't even thought about football being kicked in any of that.
No, it's not. That's the thing. It's like that takes care of itself. If you've got a group of players who can be themselves and you know that they're going to go on that pitch and they're going to focus on everything that needs to be focused on, like they're going to die. If they're coming on for 30 seconds, they're going to give you everything they've got in that 30 seconds. That's how you build teams. That's how you build people. That's how you build people up to become, said, a team that was meant to get relegated in League Two that goes on to actually get promoted to the Championship. And realistically, probably could have stayed in the Championship if it was a different circumstances.
But also the player, you.
Yeah.
Who thought he was done.
Yeah.
And too old and not good enough and too big. But went back to where he was.
And made me enjoy football. Made me like enjoy being part of it. There was no politics. There was no like, I'm fighting him to get in that place, or like it was just a case of like, if he's playing, I'm going
to
be screaming. I'm
not sure you wanted to fight against Bayo anyway. If that was the case.
No, yeah, it'd take about 7 or 8 of us to fight. But again, it's like we had such big characters who have achieved a lot. Myself, Adam Alab, like Bayo, Nathan Tyson, Sam Saunders. All these people had achieved a lot in the game.
Yeah,
but they were willing to be themselves, and they were willing to put the work in. And that created such an amazing atmosphere. And as I said, I loved being there in those 3 years I was there. And then that's when I came out of the game after that.
I've never heard you talk about that.
Yeah.
And I felt on the edge of my seat. I felt like I was, I could see how animated and how excited you were. And
but that's how it should be.
What a beautiful experience that must have been. That time at that football club. As you were saying that as well, like I said, I wasn't thinking about a football being kicked.
Yeah.
I was thinking about the emotion involved in that. And this brings me on to another thought I have when it comes to football, and it's the overuse of data and how we're quantifying success and the metric of success. And yes, I understand football is about winning games and it's about achieving 3 points and it's about scoring more goals than the other team. I accept that.
Yeah.
I also accept there's a real place for your stat vests, giving you all your sprints and your kilometers covered and your heart rate. And I get it. But that isn't the only way we can visualize and feel success. That's not the only way we determine success. That's not the only metric we have for success. Because the reality is in that environment, what it created was from the emotion you built in the change room and the connection you had together, who could get in earliest and who could leave latest?
Yeah.
Your data's going to look after itself.
Yeah, yeah.
You're talking about a final at Wembley when it's silent. Yeah, you're digging in and building each other up. I can guarantee you're running further than you would have ever run without that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm not saying there isn't a place for the data.
Yeah, yeah. No, 100%.
I just think there's something that comes before it.
Yeah.
I just think there's methods and means and practices and culture and effort we can put into making people better.
Yeah.
As individuals, as human beings, as real human beings. And everything we want from them to go and achieve, they will go and achieve it and more.
Yeah. Well, 100%. I think you give people the right conditions and they will shine. And I think sometimes in football, we don't give people the right conditions.
Yeah.
And I think for me anyway, at the moment, football is just becoming very robotic. It's becoming very, you have to be like this and you have to be that and you have to be in this position at that time. And and I just think it's taking away the spontaneity, it's taking away the authenticity of these players. Like I don't really feel that we see the likes of Zidane's and the Ronaldinho's and all these flair players who are authentic in the game. I feel it's just becoming very rigid.
Mm.
And it's, as you said, there is place for data and that kind of stuff. But I think if you can really give your players that courage and that trust to be themselves.
Immeasurable.
Yeah.
Things.
And, yeah. And show them that they can be themselves and there's nothing wrong with that. I think you run through brick walls for people.
Oh my God.
Run through brick walls for people. If they can just say, you be who you are. This is to the expectations. I expect you to work hard, like whatever, blah, blah, blah. But you just be you. How in your life is someone just be you? Just be you. I've got no expectations.
I know, it makes me feel emotional. It makes me feel really emotional.
Yeah.
But that's like how often, I can't tell you, if ever, someone's ever sat next to me and said, just be you, and that's really
enough.
Good.
Yeah, that's enough. Just be you.
I have the word, if you're watching on YouTube, I have the word enough tattooed on my hand.
Yeah.
There for me to see every day.
Yeah.
I try to remind myself.
Yeah.
It's literally tattooed into my skin because I try to remind myself.
But sometimes wow. I think you need someone else to say it. I think there's a place yeah. for you and me to say it to ourselves. But then when someone gives you that permission and well, not permission, but someone says to you, just be you. Don't need to be anything else. Just be you. And then that brings up a lot of questions though, because who are you?
Yeah. The ceiling that we think is there, I think lifts when you're given that permission.
Mm.
That ceiling of potential, that ceiling of self-doubt, that ceiling of fear, that ceiling where your dreams sit just above it.
Mm.
I think, and I know, we have the power to remove that for people.
Mm.
I really believe that. Hopefully we've got the power to remove it for ourselves.
Yeah.
Scratching the surface.
That's the thing you said, it's bringing people together. It's saying to them, just be you. Just be you. Don't need to be anything else. I know these are the goals you want to achieve, but you'll achieve them just being you. And we're always told, you've got to be this way, you've got to be that way, you've got to do it this way, you've got to do it that way. How many people say to you, and you just said it then, how many people come up to you and say, just be you. Do what you're going to do, but just be you doing it. It's a freedom then, because then you're not having to be anything.
Freedom. Flow state.
Yeah.
I think we always look for looking for a natural ending, to leave people on a thought-provoking moment. And I'm literally listening to you now and I've got a whirlwind of really positive thoughts in my head.
Mm.
And I wanted to share a quote that I've read in some of the talks I've done at different places, but I read it out to you before we started. I thought it kind of harnessed what we were trying to do here, or unharnessed maybe, yeah. but was a good representation of what you've just said and what we're trying to do. But perhaps actually as we talk, then actually it's more than what this quote I'm about to give you. It's more than that. It's not just saying it's okay to be you, but showing you the potential of what that yeah. could possibly be.
Yeah.
Not that just it's okay. Not that just that you're enough, that you could go and be everything you've ever dreamed of.
And more.
So I'm going to share this and we're going to leave you pensive and thoughtful ahead of the next episode. Be the people who break the cycle. If you were judged, choose understanding. If you were rejected, choose acceptance. If you were shamed, choose compassion. Be the people you needed when you were hurting, not the people who hurt you. Vow to be better than what broke you, to heal instead of becoming bitter, so you can act from your heart and not from your pain. One day you will tell your story of how you overcame what you went through, and it will be someone else's survival guide.
It's beautiful. It's so apt.
We'll see you in a few weeks.